Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Kurt Ryan, who's a professor of political science at Appalachian State University, where he specializes in international relations and comparative politics, with a particular interest in the Middle East, Islam and politics, international terrorism, and he's also a Fulbright scholar to the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan and the author of Jordan in Transition from Hussein to Abdullah and Inter-Arab Alliances, Regime Security and Jordanian Foreign Policy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kurt Ryan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And King Abdullah of Jordan has been visiting Washington and seeing a lot of senators and officials. He seems to have an incredibly busy schedule with a whole bunch of meetings, the last of which, the 16th of which, will be out here in California on Friday, where he'll be spending the day with President Obama at the Annenberg Estate at Rancho Mirage, where the president met with earlier with the Chinese leader, the new Chinese leader Xi. So the impression is that the U.S. is pulling out a lot of stops here for this very small country. So what's on the agenda, do you think?
Well, I think President Obama and King Abdullah have, first of all, developed a really close relationship, and President Obama actually doesn't have that reputation with most world leaders. He usually has a reputation for being a bit standoffish and not developing intimately close relationships, and this seems to be an exception, and that's probably a key word in that Jordan as a regime, as a government, as a country, has been very much marketing itself as a kind of exception in the Arab Spring, that it's not undergoing the kind of instability we've seen in other countries, everything from civil war to revolution. And I think, if anything, for the Jordanians, they want to shore up the U.S. relationship, absolutely vital for them. And I think increasingly for the U.S., they see Jordan as a longtime vital ally in the region, everything from the peace process to, again, the Arab Spring. And I'm certain that Syria is on the agenda of their meeting.
Of course, the meeting is being described as a bachelor's retreat, since both men will be missing their wives on Valentine's Day. But you mentioned Syria, and it would seem that would be on the agenda. I mean, Jordan is absorbing an enormous amount of refugees from Syria on the Jordanian-Syrian border in these vast tent cities. They already absorbed an awful lot of Iraqi refugees during the long Iraq War. They already have a population of Palestinian refugees that have been there for decades that I think are about 60% of the population. So if you add all of these, the Palestinians, then the Iraqis, and now the Syrians, you get the picture of a country being swamped by refugees.
Yeah, and then I think in many ways many Jordanians feel that way. And there's a bit of a mixed set of feelings, I suppose. On the one hand, there's a lot of pride that Jordan has sees itself, and its monarchs certainly have seen themselves as great survivors in a difficult region with difficult neighbors in the Middle East. But they have survived, and many waves of refugees, Palestinians from the West, who, as you said, are at least half the population, possibly a majority, Iraqis from the East in more than one wave, but especially after 2003, and now at least 600,000, well above half a million now, Syrian refugees in the kingdom. So we're at the point where probably one out of every 10 people in the kingdom is in fact a Syrian refugee. And many of the others are descendants of refugees. And so on the one hand, there's a pride that they've been able to host so many people. But on the other hand, there's a lot of political instability that has gone with that over the years. A lot of concern, because this is also a very poor country. It's not one of the great oil giants of the Middle East. They, to be blunt, cannot afford all these Syrian refugees and are absolutely desperate for increased international aid, which is another thing I'm sure is on the agenda. They're concerned about the security issues of Syria and the Syrian civil war. But they're also deeply concerned about what this means for the economy. And this all hit at a moment that the Jordanian economy has been utterly awful for the last several years, but it hasn't really been able to recover with war and revolution and waves of refugees. So there's a reason King Abdullah's agenda has been so packed. He has made a point in Washington to meet with, in quotes, everybody, Republicans, Democrats, Senate officials, House figures, the Secretary of State, the World Bank while he was there, and now the capper on the whole thing, of course, is a very personal relationship with President Obama.
Again, I'm speaking with Kurt Ryan, who's a professor of political science at Appalachian State University, specializing in international relations and comparative politics, with particular interest in the Middle East, Islam and politics, and international terrorism. He's also a Fulbright scholar to the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan and the author of Jordan in Transition, From Hussein to Abdullah and Inter-Arab Alliances, Regime Security and Jordanian Foreign Policy. So given that the situation in Syria has, for all intents and purposes, been out of control, and even though it's a stalemate, it seems to be one that could go on for a long time. And we know that the CIA has been active in Jordan, training Syrians of, you know, the secular Syrians, who apparently the battlefield for, in terms of the rebels, has been dominated by jihadis, even though the Saudis seem to have had a recent change of mind and have issued some laws against people going to fight jihad. But the impression I get is that from day one, we've never had a coherent policy about what to do about Syria, whereas on the other side, the Russians and the Iranians seem to be very clear about their support for Assad. We seem to know what we don't want, but we don't seem to know what we do want in Syria. Would you agree with that?
I would, and I think it's also changed several times. I think, you know, more than a year ago, it seems to me that there was a great deal of expectation, at least, that the Assad regime was pretty much doomed and its days were numbered, and now it has proven, you know, an extraordinary staying power, ruthless staying power. But of course, it's backed by Russia, by Iran, and the opposition is divided and is now experiencing this influx of foreign fighters coming in as well, and it's divided both in terms of the civilian leadership and armed people on the ground. But I think it leaves the Jordanians in a particular bind, because while their close ally, the Americans, seem to have a sort of waffling policy that is, in many ways, is designed not to reproduce Iraq 2003, and the shadow of that, I think, casts itself over U.S. policy in Syria. But for the Jordanians, this is the next-door neighbor, and the capitals themselves are only a few hours from each other, so it's almost, if you will, closer than it appears. And it's been very frustrating, I think, for Jordanian policymakers to think the Americans might be about to intervene, and then, okay, no, they're not going to intervene. But every outcome for them is actually, unfortunately, horrid. It being identified with the opposition, if Assad stays, is terrible for the Jordanians, but a potential Islamist government of the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood or some other coalition would be terrible from their perspective. An even worse case scenario would be if it degenerates to Somalia or Afghanistan, warlordism and Al-Qaeda having an even deeper presence in the country. So from their perspective, as a security issue, even besides the refugee concern, every potential outcome looks horrid, and they see it as almost a containment issue of just, again, try to survive what's going on to the neighbor to the north. And it's not like the neighbors to the west and the east, Israel and the Palestinians on the one hand, Iraq on the other, are doing so wonderfully smoothly as well. So really every border, almost every border in the kingdom, is highly problematic. It's for a country that's been so insecure over the years, this is, even for them, this is an unusually difficult time.
So it's a peculiar picture, isn't it, that you're portraying there, Kurt Ryan, in a sense that this is a stable country surrounded by instability and somehow has maintained its stability, even though it's got such internal fissures and pressures with so many refugees and this unresolved Palestinian situation where the Palestinians are the majority of the population. And it's crying out for some clarity, isn't it? I mean, the king, I imagine, must be asking Obama and his American hosts, you know, what are you going to do about stabilizing this region? And particularly, what are you going to do about Syria?
Yeah, absolutely. And so my assumption is that very high on the agenda in all the discussions all week long, and then capping it with the meeting with the president personally, is the Syrian situation on a political side and a security side. And the refugee issue and economic aid to the kingdom. And so there's a lot built into this visit. The stakes are very high from the Jordanian size. But meanwhile, I think there's a tendency, understandable tendency, for a smaller country with the economy that it has, to rely on foreign policy, to rely on external aid, especially in difficult situations. But there are actually, unfortunately, I suppose, other pressures at home, because there are many Jordanians for the last several years who, when they say Arab Spring, mean democratization. They mean it, to use it as a positive term. They mean democratization and openness and more reform, and are very frustrated that the kingdom hasn't gone far enough, in their view, along those lines. There's still other Jordanians who see themselves as more conservative, royalist, etc., who, when they say Arab Spring, mean something very negative. They associate it with civil war and revolution and violence and turmoil, and want to hold back any push for reform inside the kingdom. So there's all, meanwhile, this domestic political, so far very peaceful struggle, but it's intense. People wanting this not to be a matter of foreign policy bailing out the country and to avoid domestic change, and others arguing, if you look around us, if you look around Jordan, we have had some domestic change, we have had some reform, and this is not the time to push for any more reform. But there's a really deep, extensive debate going on inside Jordan for where the country should go internally as a country. What should kind of country should it be in the future?
Well, it seems that the king, what he does is he shuffles the deck with the parliament, doesn't he, and keeps, you know, firing people and keeps calling on the politicians, who are obviously somewhat circumscribed because it is a monarchy, to perform better. And one of the ways they seem to placate the population is through subsidies for basics, fuel and food, etc. And that's where, I guess, foreign aid comes into it. So I imagine the king can make a strong case that he's indispensable given the neighborhood and how unstable it is. But on the other hand, can he continually put off real reform?
I would say no to the last part, but to give them credit, there has been some reform. It's just not been as deep as many would hope it would be. They have changed the laws on elections and political parties and reformed the constitution, created an anti-corruption commission, which is one of the major complaints people have, that this needs to be addressed more significantly. They had an independent electoral commission, and they brought in hundreds and hundreds of international observers for their most recent, I was actually one of them, for their most recent parliamentary election. And I've spoken with the king about this, and he is very proud of what's been accomplished here. But I've also spoken with lots of grassroots activists on the left and the right, religious and secular and so on, who feel that it hasn't gone far enough, and that that there is a continual reshuffling of the deck, and that the old way of doing this isn't going to work anymore, because even with foreign aid, there's not enough money for the subsidies as there used to be. And what's disturbing to a lot of people, even very hardcore pro-regime conservatives, is a lot of the agitation at the moment comes from what used to be core elements of support in the regime, especially younger people from East Jordanian communities who see themselves as East Jordanian, as tribal, as historically pro-Hashemite, not necessarily calling for revolution, but there's a lot of anger that their communities, they feel like, are being passed by in a sort of neoliberal economic agenda. So there are other social rifts that need to be repaired, I suppose, and the king himself will see himself as very often as balancing all these different groups off and trying to keep what is actually a more diverse society than it appears held together. And they're proud of their record as Hashemites of doing that. Their critics very often use the exact same analogy and see it as a kind of balancing game that is almost a matter of the wheels running, but the vehicle is not moving forward. And that's the issue here. There's the perception of, is Jordan moving forward with reform, or is this cosmetic reform to get us through a crisis situation, and it's not deeper than that? And I think that crisis of confidence is a key issue that the king has to address. And one way to address it would be to take what's been accomplished so far and to go deeper, to push the reform process deeper. And I would be curious if that's one of the issues that gets discussed between the president and the king in California, or if that's just not on the agenda. Will the U.S. nudge Jordan to go further in reform, or do they feel like they've gone far enough, and this is not the time to nudge.
Well, it's pretty clear that the U.S. is trying to nudge Netanyahu to finally have a serious deal with the Palestinians, and that would take an enormous amount of pressure off the king, particularly if there could be some kind of Jordanian-Palestinian compact, which has a certain logic to it. My understanding is that Netanyahu sort of, because of the intense right-wing backlash that he has in his coalition, that he sees any kind of deal with the Palestinians as a form of political suicide for himself. And we don't know whether he's going to have the courage to dump the right wing and make a deal with the center and the left. But, you know, obviously Kerry's doing all he can to push that forward. But it's not, you know, that agony's been going on forever. Is there anything, any indications to you that there could be a breakthrough in the Palestinian issue, which would make a huge difference to Jordan?
It would make a huge difference to Jordan, and I'm not sure because, there's every reason that there should be a breakthrough. I'm not wildly optimistic that there actually will be because of the internal aspects of Israeli politics and to some extent of Palestinian politics, but perhaps less so at the moment. But the Jordanians, to their credit, have been saying for years that even when Iraq appeared to be the big issue in the region and now Syria the big issue in the region and so on, no matter what it has been over the last several years, they have consistently said, no, the big issue is actually the Palestinian question and establishing a sovereign, independent Palestinian state between Israel and Jordan, the state of the West Bank and Gaza, presumably with East Jerusalem as its capital. They've been very consistent. The king brings it up at every opportunity to every audience, of Western audiences in particular. He certainly has in this visit. And for them, it is vital, but it's also kicked up a lot of internal politics. There's a lot of the Jordanian media has been abuzz this past week with the rumor mill has been going crazy that what if Jordan is somehow sidelined in a deal. And what they're thinking of here is back in 1993, when there was this great breakthrough at Oslo, or what appeared to be a great breakthrough at first, with the Palestinians and the Israelis, it was a complete shock to the Jordanians. They had no idea this was coming. Nobody told them they were meeting, and it was popped on them out of the blue. And there is a genuine fear that this might happen again. It's not clear that this would happen again, but the fact that there's a worry should tell us a lot. If there's a very conservative movement in Jordan that is determined that above all things there will not be what they call the alternative homeland, that Jordan will not become the alternative homeland for the Palestinians, and this will not be permanent, in other words. But the closer we get to a potential peace breakthrough, the higher that worry actually gets. So it's actually, I think, important that we get some real, more perhaps transparent negotiations going on so that the rumor mill isn't so rife with conspiracies that Jordan is going to be left out in the cold, because it's not likely that it will be, and certainly the king has no intention of letting that happen. But while he's here, meanwhile, back at home, the press, the prime minister and so on have been hearing all kinds of things about this, that Jordan might have to pay the price, solve everyone else's problems, and that also needs to be dealt with. I hope that's something that President Obama and the king actually discuss quite candidly, because it's led to a great deal of social tension in the kingdom, that this is a fear anyway.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us, Kurt Ryan. These are obviously very important talks that are going on, and they don't get the coverage that I think, I mean, I guess in a sense, the Jordanian king is fighting above his weight, right?
Yeah, in some ways, but I think Jordan has made itself, even before King Abdullah, I mean, his father was King Hussein, who ruled for many decades, and made Jordan, I guess, punch above its weight for decades, and I think it still does. I mean, if you look at it on a map or in any other way, Jordan is militarily, politically, economically weaker than any neighbor. But a long time ago, they charted a foreign policy course that made the kingdom kind of indispensable to many countries in the Middle East peace process, in the Cold War, actually, that was King Hussein, and now even in a anti-terrorism coalition and so on, King Abdullah has been very emphatic about participating in that. So they've made themselves a key link in Middle East foreign policy, in the eyes of many Western countries, not just the United States, but the entire European Union, I would say, and global institutions as well, from the IMF to the World Bank. They host the World Economic Forum one part every year, et cetera, at the Dead Sea. They've made themselves bigger than they would appear and more influential than maybe objectively it would look like they should be. And that's something that started with King Hussein. But King Abdullah has made a point of maintaining that influence despite the small state.
Well, I thank you again for joining us, Kurt Ryan.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Kurt Ryan, who's a professor of political science at Appalachian State University, specializing in international relations and comparative politics, with particular interest in the Middle East, Islam and politics, and international terrorism. He's also a Fulbright scholar to the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan and the author of Jordan in Transition from Hussein to Abdullah and Inter-Arab Alliances, Regime Security and Jordanian Foreign Policy. We're going to take a brief station break and be back joined in the studio by the filmmakers of The Square, nominated for Best Feature Documentary in this year's Academy Awards.